Today on the podcast, we're going to talk about something that we do here at Canadian A Educational Resources, which is we publish and carry children's picture books. Today I'm going to be interviewing an author who has written a series of books called It Takes a Village to Raise a Child, and it features stories about her time in Tanzania with her children and what the children learned about living in a new culture. We're also going to be discussing a contest that the author is holding for an illustrator for one of her upcoming books. So if you have an artistically minded homeschool student or you yourself are potentially an illustrator, you'll want to have a listen to this episode. Welcome to Canada Homeschools, the dose of inspiration and encouragement for Canadian homeschoolers. Canada Homeschools features interviews with homeschool group organizers, resource suppliers, and conversations with everyday homeschoolers just like you, all from a Canadian perspective. I'm your host, Rowan Atkinson. I'd like to thank you for joining me. Now let's get started.
In 400 meters. In 100 meters.
You have reached your destination.
Today I have the privilege of speaking with Laurie Vandenhurk, an author, and I'm going to start by telling you a little bit about her and then we'll get into the conversation. So Laurie lived with her husband Ted and their children in community with the hardworking, hospitable people of Tanzania from 1985 to 1997. Now they farm in central Ontario, Canada. Laurie enjoys hiking, reading, singing, playing guitar, and board games. Ted and Laurie spent a lot of time with their grandchildren, who are presently the ages that their own children were when they lived in Tanzania. Welcome, Laurie. What can you add to that introduction? Tell us about how you came to move from Canada to Tanzania and about the work that you did there.
Thank you, Rowan, for this opportunity. When I was a little girl, my grandmother's brother, we called him Uncle Walter, was a medical doctor in Angola. They were there for 40 years. And the first time I met him, I was about 4 years old, and he was a great storyteller. I think that storytelling comes in the family. I have to live into the tradition. Anyway, it was at that time that a spark was created in me, and I thought, when I grow up, that's what I want to do. I want to work. I want to work in Africa, and I want to help people. And my whole childhood was oriented towards that. And my parents supported me in that dream and that goal. And I even went to university, chose my course at university, human nutrition, to open that door for me. I met my future husband, who is now my husband, at university. He was an Aggie, an agricultural student. And after we were married, we were accepted to go as overseas personnel to Tanzania with the United Church of Canada.
So can you tell me what some of the work that you did in Tanzania was?
We were teaching at an agriculturally biased secondary school for our first 3 years. I taught home economics and English and sometimes biology. And then we were working in community development. A lot of our stories in this children's book series come from our time in the village when we were doing community development. I was homeschooling. I was teaching sewing and I organized local tailors to teach tailoring to some of the women in the village. Ted was digging wells, a water reservoir for cattle. We were enabling local trades and local businesses, everything from basket making to carpentry. We would help to sell their products in the city where they could get a better price than they could in the village. And in our last 3 years, we were at a women's training center. where I helped with curriculum development and sourced local teachers to teach about the various things that women leaders were learning. And Ted was teaching economics and also helping to manage the farm at the center.
Thanks. Well, it definitely sounds like you were making an impact there with all the things that you were doing, and as well as homeschooling your children. But Lori, if you could summarize, because the neat thing about having an experience like that is that not only do you get to make an impact, but the experience makes an impact on you. So what would you say the impact was on you and your family from living in Tanzania?
For sure. Now, we did go to Tanzania with the understanding that only half of our job was there. The other half was in Canada, and raising awareness in Canada about how Tanzanians live and what their values are, what we learned from them. So that was our understanding when we went. We went by invitation from the local church. We weren't going with our own agenda. We went to do what they asked us to do. What we learned was huge. To give you an example, when we were preparing to go overseas, we were studying at the Summer Institute of Linguistics in Toronto to teach us how to learn languages. And one of the things that one of the facilitators said was, if you can speak many languages, you're called multilingual. If you can speak two languages, you're bilingual. If you speak one language, you're American. Well, maybe Canadians aren't quite as bad as that, but we have this mentality in North America that it's strange to learn another language, that everybody should think and speak the way I do. And so going to another country and learning another language gave us perspective that it's okay to be different, that there are reasons for the way of life of Tanzanians. And just to give you an example, in our first 3 years, we were planting a garden outside our house. And Ted, my husband, was digging with the Tanzanian djembe or hoe, the way he would have cultivated in Canada. And a neighbor came by, a neighbor we called Babu, which means grandfather. And he said, that's not the way that you cultivate for sweet potatoes. And this 80-year-old grabbed a hoe and alongside Ted helped him dig these huge ridges, well, 2 feet high ridges, so that there would be room for the sweet potatoes to grow in the ridges and not under the ground, and they wouldn't get damaged. We have something to learn from them. I could give you a similar example in terms of how I learned to cook over there. Another thing that I learned, and maybe the most important thing I learned, is that a stranger is just a friend that you haven't met. And this is the most important thing that I want to communicate in the children's storybooks. It takes a village. Living in Tanzania helped us to understand our privilege. And by that, I mean not just what I'm thankful for, but what I have responsibility for. I have been blessed to be healthy, to be in a family that has always loved and supported me, to have an education, to have the ability to learn. And all of these things are privileges and gifts that are not given to me for my benefit alone, but because I have a responsibility to share what I have with others. We saw this certainly lived in the village life in Tanzania, where they understood that we are all there to help one another. Living with less in Tanzania helps me to live and be contented with less here. When we first moved home from Tanzania and we bought a farm, I felt so guilty about the big house that we had and all of the amenities that came with our life here. And I had trouble reconciling that with my former lifestyle in Tanzania. And then I realized that the house perhaps wasn't just for me, but for me to offer a space for others to gather. That's how I reconciled my plenty in Canada, by recognizing it wasn't just for me, but was there for me to share. The other thing that we learned about in living in Tanzania was that was about the fragility of life and the interdependence of life. Sometimes people would get sick over there. Sometimes I got sick over there, and the doctors didn't know what I was sick with and couldn't treat it. Before I went to Tanzania, I was 24, and I thought doctors knew everything and could cure everything. And now I realize that they can't, and that people do get sick, and sometimes people die. But in village life in Tanzania, when people get sick, they help each other. When people die, they're there for one another. And it didn't matter whether you were Christian or Muslim or neither, you all went to the funeral in the village and supported the family of the loved one who had died. And the death of someone was so important that you didn't quit working for a couple of hours to go to the funeral. Sometimes you quit working for 2 or 3 days. Anyway, needless to say, we learned a lot from living in Tanzania. It was a watershed in our lives.
That's so amazing, Lori. Thank you for sharing those things. And my heart was resonating with so many of what I would call your takeaways from being there. So you've written some stories for children based on your experiences and some of the things that you and your children learned in Africa. Can you tell us about these stories? Maybe what some of the titles are and what they're about? Just give us a little taste.
Sure. So I tried to write the stories from our children's perspectives. So far there are 3 published books, and I expect the 4th will be out within a month. The first one is called Ricker Sees an Elephant. It's illustrated with photographs. When we prepared to go to Tanzania in 1985, Ricker was 3 years old, could speak very clearly in English. The last week before we left, we arrived at someone's house to spend the night, and he said, "I'm just going to sleep in the car," because we had been moving around so much that nothing felt like home. Anyway, we didn't know how to prepare our 3-year-old son for living in Tanzania, so I said, "There will be elephants there." We arrived in Dar es Salaam in the middle of the night, went to the YWCA where we spent the night. He woke up in the morning and looked out the window and saw a lot of children in the middle of the city, and he said, "Where are the elephants?" Of course, there are no elephants in the middle of Dar es Salaam. So that story is about a young child learning, moving to a new place, making new friends, learning the customs, and just learning to see life differently. There is a saying that says, you can't unsee an elephant. And that was kind of the inspiration for this story, the realization that because we have seen elephants physically and metaphorically, that our lives would be different. In Do It Myself, Amy, we have the typical, I think fairly typical, pattern of young children. Amy was extremely independent. She didn't want us doing anything for her if she could do it for herself. So the story follows a young Amy doing the things that she saw village people doing, the other children in the village and the adults in the village. You see her learning to carry a bucket of water on her head and learning to hoe in the garden. And it has a little twist to the story as well. In Do It Myself, Amy, we realize that it doesn't just take a village to raise a child, but it takes a child and an adult and all of us to make a village, that we all need to do for ourselves what we can for ourselves to make a stronger village and a stronger world. Wild for a Pet. In Wild for a Pet, I'm kind of poking fun at our family as we try to make pets of animals in Tanzania. And our children kept bringing home wild animals and saying, "Oh, can I keep this one? Can I have this hedgehog?" Anyway, this is an interesting story about different attitudes towards pets in Canada and Tanzania, and my children learning to make friends with animals. The story that's coming up soon is called The Mystery of the Missing Fish, And because it's a mystery, I'm not going to give you very much information, but it does tell you a bit about the life in the village around the river and the life-giving and the life-giving properties of the Seasdall River and the village where we lived.
I'm biased, but these books are so great. And you have also done the photographs and some of the illustrations, and then some others have done some illustrations. Can you share a little bit about that?
When we went to Tanzania, my parents were great on photography. They made sure we had a really good camera, and they kept every letter that they sent. They said, take more pictures, take more pictures, take more pictures. And they said something that is really quite true, that in the beginning, everything is new and you notice things that after they become familiar, you don't notice anymore. And so true enough, we have more pictures from our first 3 years than from later times in Tanzania. And when I started writing these children's stories, I realized that a lot of the stories in my head didn't have photographs that went with them. And so I tried to fill in the stories with illustrations. My sister and my niece, who have studied some art in school, helped with, they did the pictures in Wild for a Pet, and they did a super job on them. But they have other full-time jobs. And so my sister and my daughter said to me, Mom, you can illustrate pictures. All you have to do is, you know, pay attention to detail. And so I tried and I found out that I could do some illustration. But it is so excruciatingly painful for me to do illustrations. It was fun. I will give you, it was fun, especially the coloring part. But I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to give perspective to the pictures. I don't know how to do light and shadow. And that's why I engaged Laura Yannarelli to do as a visual editor, so that she's fixed up some of my illustrations to give them better perspective and light and shadow. Anyway, I'm really happy for the help that I've had in those illustrations. But I have a lot of stories to write, and I don't have enough illustrators. So that's why I'm running this contest.
So we're going to get into more detail about the contest a little later in this podcast episode. But I just want to circle back to a question that I skipped on you, which is, what would you say the purpose of the It Takes a Village books is? Like, if you can summarize it for us.
When I think back to my childhood and the stories that my uncle told us, I realized when Rowan asked me these questions that I'm trying to create for the children who read these stories a similar experience to what I had as a child hearing stories from Africa. I want children to get excited about children living in other parts of the world and to recognize that they may wear different clothes. They may speak a different language. They may even play different games. But that just makes them more interesting. And a stranger is a friend that you haven't met. And I feel that in this global village that we're living in now, that what is missing is an understanding that we all belong to each other. As the world becomes smaller in so many ways, it's important that we don't look at people that we don't know with fear, but with interest. So that's what I'm trying to get across, or that's the context for the stories. They're not didactic or teaching stories. They are just stories of children playing, but the context is one of global community and friendship. And they're playful, they're fun, they're joyous, they're brightly colored. And the children that I have been sharing them with are enjoying them.
That's a very good summary. So it's probably good for us, because our listeners are homeschoolers, as both of us have been, that each of the books has an enrichment page at the end that gives opportunity for more educational enrichment on some of the topics that come up in the books and ideas for further study. So you could take a book and then make a unit study out of it. So, for example, Ricker sees an elephant. There are some things about the differences between African elephants and Indian elephants and how you can research further. So you can make a whole unit study on elephants just with the book as a springboard. And we have many other discussion opportunities and enrichment opportunities at the back of every book. So that's something that as homeschoolers you might want to know to get as much value as possible, although I do think the stories and illustrations are value in themselves. And then one thing that we're adding is that we have Kiswahili translation beginning in the mystery of the missing fish. So we have a little pronunciation guide at the back, and so that translation is there to expand horizons for learning a new language as well. So we're really excited about those features in the books, and so we thought we should mention that.
One of the other educational pieces for the books, they are not written as readers, but they are designed for young readers. So the left-hand page of the book is for a more advanced young reader. And the right-hand page of the book, the script underneath the picture, is the story in very short form for very beginner readers. So a parent or a young reader can read the left-hand side of the page, and then a young reader can kind of guess what the right-hand page says because of what the story says and what the picture shows. And there's a lot of repetition in words in the short version as well on the right-hand side of the page.
Yes, thanks for mentioning that. And we were very intentional with that as we were formatting and crafting the books for various reading levels. And then we also have some little grammar or pronunciation notes just sprinkled throughout where they would help a more beginning reader to be able to figure out what the words are. So that's another feature in the books, in addition to the delightful stories. So Lori, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the podcast is because, as you briefly mentioned, you are holding a contest for illustrators to contribute to a book in the series. And so I wanted to help you get the word out to the homeschooling audience. Can you tell us more details, as promised, about the contest?
So the contest is open for anyone between the ages of 9 and 90, although if somebody was really good on the upper end of that, sure. And to residents of Ontario who have never had their pictures or their art published before. So the idea of the contest is that the contestants will submit one picture that relates to a paragraph in a new story that I am working on. They'll submit an illustration to go with that paragraph, and a panel of three judges will judge those pictures, and $100 will be awarded at the time of the selection of the winner, and $900 will be given as a gratuity to the illustrator when they complete 10 pictures for the publication in a new story in the series It Takes a Village. The illustrator will be credited in the book, have their pictures published, and will receive 10 free books to give to their family and friends, and 20 books that they can obtain from by wholesale. Now, one of the things that I haven't said up until now is that I'm not trying to make money from these books. The books, I'm selling the books for $10 in person. On Amazon.ca, they sell for $11.99. Each of these books, a portion of the profit, whatever I can afford to give from the profit, will go to a charity in Tanzania called the Eric Memorial Foundation for Education and Rehabilitation of the Disabled. It's a small charity that runs in the rural area around Morogoro in Tanzania that they are identifying children with special needs, and they are helping their families to provide care and support for those children. They also have two centers where some of the children who can benefit from living at the center can go and live and get their formal education. So at the books that I sell at home, I am, out of my $10, I am giving $3 of each of those books to Amford. The ones I sell on Amazon, I'm not sure how much I'm getting from that. So I don't know how much I'm giving to Amford. But anyway, why am I saying all this? Why am I saying this is because those who participate in the Illustrator contest are not going to be doing it just for the prize money, but because you want to be part of a bigger project, a bigger picture. You share with me the passion of every stranger is a friend. And you want to help disabled families in Tanzania. And so I invite you to take part and share your gifts and your talents in this project.
So where can we go to get in touch with you regarding submissions for the contest or to learn more about your books?
So I have an email address. It is villagestoriesforchildren@gmail.com. The four is a number and the rest is words without any spaces or underscores or dots.
So if you want to find more information about the contest, I will put links to the Facebook page for the It Takes a Village series, as well as the email address that Lori mentioned. It Takes a Village Books is the Facebook page that you can search out as well to find more information. And so all that kind of information will be at canadahomeschools.com. on the episode page for this episode. So Lori, I just want to ask you one more thing about the contest, and that is, what is the deadline where they have to get their submissions into you?
So if you'd like to participate in the contest, get in touch with me as soon as possible with my email address, and I will send you the contract and the paragraph and, you know, some a photo to give you a context for the illustration. And then the illustration has to be submitted to me by May 31st. The judging will be done by June 30th.
Thank you. So just to recap, they send you an email telling you that they are interested in participating in the contest. You will send them the relevant information that they need to know in order to prepare their sample illustration, the contract, and then the description of what it is that they'll be illustrating, and perhaps a photograph to give them an idea of what they would be illustrating or the type of thing you're looking for.
First you send me the contract back, signed, and then I send you the information for doing the illustration.
Okay, so there are a few steps, and we'll try to put that on the show notes page for this episode as well. If you're listening on a podcast app such as Google Play, Stitcher Radio, or Apple Podcasts, I will also have links in the description notes below, so we'll explain it on the website as well. If you are looking to get a hold of some of these great children's picture books, if you're in Simcoe County, you can get them at the Torn Pages bookstore in Stayner. They carry them. You can also get them on Amazon at amazon.ca. You can put in the search bar Lori Vandenherk, or you can put one of the titles, Ricker Sees an Elephant, Do It Myself, Amy, or Wild for a Pet, for starters. And once you do one of the books, the others should come up because it is a series and it's put in Amazon that way as a series. There will also be links to purchase the book in the show notes from this episode. And we'll also be carrying them on Canadian-A.com. So I think those are all the places you can get the books for now. And I hope you'll get them because they are a great resource to encourage your kids to learn about other cultures. And as we said, there are some educational opportunities too at the back of every book to take the book further than the delightful stories. So I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast today, Lori. It has been great working as your publisher. I love our collaboration, and I hope others will too.
Thank you so much for having me, and I loved to do this, and I love working with you, Rowan. It's awesome. Thanks.
Thank you. Happy homeschooling, Canada.
Thank you so much for listening. You can find helpful links and show notes for this episode at our website, CanadaHomeschools.com. Please share this podcast with your friends and leave a rating and positive review on your podcast provider. This will help others find their dose of inspiration and encouragement. Happy homeschooling, Canada! Hee hee!